We had a couple of questions about dry ice. One of them is, how long can you keep a body on dry ice? And you can refrigerate a body indefinitely. Okay. Obviously, there's a cutoff, just as there is in your freezer at home. But you can refrigerate a body indefinitely. Don't worry about that. It's good to have you back. Archbishop Dimitri lay in repose in the cathedral in Dallas for 5 days. Exactly the way I just described it, putting the ice on, covering him with my vestments, taking the ice off. 5 days, continuous reading of the Gospels. They did turn down the air conditioner inside. It was 113 degrees outside. The body can be kept indefinitely on dry ice. Just take your time. Don't get excited. Like the Hitchhiker's Guide says, don't panic. Just take your time.
Do you have to keep the casket closed to keep the coolness in? No.
The dry ice is right almost in contact. Not really in contact. Which brings up another thing. Please exercise extra special caution, those who have never encountered dry ice before. It will freeze the skin instantly. You have instant frostbite if you touch this stuff. You want to use heavy leather gloves if you're going to handle it with your hands. The reason that we put it in paper is because I think most people are familiar with the concept of fog coming off of dry ice. Don't worry about that. This keeps any vapors that are being released, the paper bag keeps them in there under the body, and we've never encountered fog. We've never even encountered condensation. We've never even had problems with water condensing and causing a problem either under the casket or anywhere. We've just never had a problem. We've never had a problem with it. Just use extreme caution. Don't let kids get around it at all. Don't play with it. We keep it, as I said, what we do is we put we have a black cover that goes over a stand that we use, and we keep it under there, so it's very handy and it's right there. So let's talk about, we've already talked about the refrigeration. The only problem we've ever encountered with refrigerating with dry ice is inexperienced people will sometimes get overzealous and freeze the body. This is not a problem. This is not a problem. Remove the dry ice, the body will thaw out in the course of a day or overnight, come back in the morning, put the ice back on the body and be a little more restrained with the use of the dry ice. We're only refrigerating. I was talking about Millie. That was one of the instances. She wanted to be buried in Pennsylvania at St. Tikhon's. Her family, we did the funeral. All of the three daughters and their husbands piled into their Suburban, and they had a trailer. We put her in a trailer. And it was a two-day trip from Charleston, South Carolina to St. Tikhon's. So they carried her up there in a trailer. The next morning, I get a call, and her son-in-law's on the phone. He says, "Tegan Mark, hey, what's up, Chuck?" I said, "I think I froze her." Don't worry about it, Chuck. She'll thaw. Freezing is reversible. Embalming is not. She'll thaw out. I don't care if you put her in the ground frozen, she's going to thaw in the ground. Don't worry about it. Of course, everything we do is love and respect for the deceased and the family. We don't want that to happen, so that's why I'm telling you about it. It can happen. But it's not a problem. Okay. When you encounter a dead body, I don't care where it is. I don't know how many of us have really experienced that. It's always a shock. It's still a shock. We're used to shaking hands and giving a hug and feeling skin that's 98.6 degrees. A body at room temperature is very, very cold, and it's a shock. And when you encounter someone who has been refrigerated, it's even more so. Because the limbs don't move, they might be in... Funeral directors and morgue operators are not necessarily real respectful and caring about their clients, let's say. They may come to you, Bob was delivered to us at the church in almost a fetal position, in a body bag, and he had just come out of the refrigerator, so we had to gently massage his limbs and let him thaw out a little bit and slowly get him out to where we could lay him out on the table. Obviously, that's not the preferred scenario. The preferred scenario is a person dies, we show up, we do everything. That's our preferred scenario. When someone dies, like my mother, who was bedridden for 5 years, she died in a fetal position. And when you encounter that, all you have to do is take your time, massage the limbs, and those muscles will relax, and you can lay a person out. If they're in any kind of position, obviously we want someone in a position of repose, laying on their back, and preferably with their arms crossed or at their sides. So if you encounter them in any position other than that, take your time, massage the limbs, and just take your time. That's the main thing. If it takes a little longer, it takes a little longer. This is a service. This is our last opportunity to serve our brother or sister in Christ. It's our last chance. This is a service that we do for them. So we take our time. Takes a little longer. Hey, boss, I'm going to be a few minutes late for work. I'm still preparing this body.
So the name of the service in the Greek for funeral is kidia, which means care. Mm-hmm. That's what the word means, care for the dead.
When I use the word service, I'm not using it usually in that with that meaning. I'm talking about we are serving this person. So there's a double meaning to that word, obviously. But, yeah. Yes?
Are we supposed to close their mouth?
It's very important to close the mouth as soon as possible. It's another real reason. Our preference is to be there. Our preference is to be there when the person dies, if at all possible. If we're called after the death, then that's the first thing we want to do. Close the mouth, close the eyes.
I didn't do that to my mother. She was in the hospital.
I know. And as I said, the morgue attendants, the funeral directors, they're not very respectful, and they don't do anything at all. I think Bob arrived in his hospital gown, didn't he? They took him out of the bed, put him in the fridge, and that was it. So we do want to close the eyes and the mouth as soon as possible. If the body is refrigerated, you're just going to have to take a little bit of time. I already told you the way that I think about it, and I always, whether we're at a funeral home or at the morgue or anywhere, if I have someone new who is going to help do this, I like to meet them outside the room and tell them what they're getting into, what they're going to see. And the way I think about it is greeting the King, and that's the way I always explain it to everyone. He's been called to greet the King, and we're going to prepare him for that. That's what we're here for. So, as I described briefly this morning, if you're in the morgue, you're going to have universal precautions. If you're at home in the bed, you have your kit. The kit has a basin in it. The kit also has a couple of bed sheets in it, and we want to take one of those bed sheets and we fold it and we fold it again. Depending on the size, you might want to fold it again, but you end up with a sheet that is several layers thick. It's about this wide, and it's the width. What was the width of the sheet is now the length of the sheet. And that is going to become our draw sheet. The healthcare workers know exactly what I'm talking about. They make all kinds of neat apparatus these days to do it, but this is the simple, easy way, and it's in your kit. We take the body, once we've got it laid out in a position that we can actually deal with, the position that we want, position of repose. And the easy way to turn a body, first off, if we want to roll the body this way, we take the far leg and rotate it over, because that leg's going to come this way, right? So we've already accomplished this much just by laying this leg over here. And then one person on one side, one on the other, we can grasp under the arm here, and down here, the leg, and pull, and the other person is pushing the hips over from the other side. Mm-hmm. Once that body is up on the side like this, we take that sheet, roll it up halfway, take the rolled up part of it, and shove it up under the body, right around the hips and the abdomen area like this, and then allow the body to come back down. Now take the other leg, roll it over the other way, and do the same thing to the other side. This is why it takes two people. Once we've accomplished that, you can usually grab, as I said, just about right under the armpit, and then down, either reaching over like that to pull the leg over, and just roll them this way. Don't use your back muscles, please. You always want to use your body weight and not your muscles. But now we've got this person is rolled back over the other way. The person on this side can see that rolled up sheet in there. They can unroll it. And now you have a sheet that's laying across the bed like this, and it's about that wide. Each person can grab that sheet, just lift slightly, and you can move that body wherever you want to go. Mm-hmm. That's called a draw sheet. It's used to draw the body. The next time we have to roll the body, the person on the far side can fold that sheet over the body. The person on this side can simply grab hold of it and use your body weight to roll the body from side to side. Don't go pulling on it. Just hold it and lean back and let your weight pull the body over. Then it's very easy. You can manipulate the body anywhere you need to go. So the first thing we're going to do is take that basin, and we're going to lift the body to where the head is more or less hanging off of the end of the bed. One person will hold it, one person will hold the basin, take a pitcher of water. If you're in the morgue, this is all very easy because they're laying on a stainless steel table that has drainage and a hose, and you know, everything you need is there because that's what they do in the morgue. In a funeral home or at home, take them up to the head of the bed, hold the head, pour some water on it, shampoo the hair, rinse the hair, all the water's going in the basin. Then when we're done, put a towel on the head, and you can move the person back onto the bed with clean hair now. Dry the hair. We don't do a lot of styling. We just naturally comb the hair for the ladies or for anyone. My wife swears that she's going to make us put makeup on her.
And he'll tell why you don't need it.
Yeah. We don't use makeup. And one of the things that is also shocking when you encounter a dead body is there's no other word for it. There's the pallor of death.
Yeah.
They look gray and ashen, and they look dead. I'm not trying to be funny or flip. It's just, it's different. It's very different. After we wash the hair, and combed it. We have a blow dryer in the kit just in case it needs to be used. We don't carry a curling iron that someone may want us to one day.
When we did Olga, the second time around when the daughter came in, they styled her hair. Okay. And you know, she always had a little hair breath.
So oh, yes.
They used a little curling iron, a hair dryer, and they put that breath back in.
Yeah. So everything is for her honor and for her children. After that, we wash the face, the ears. If someone has been in the hospital for a while, there's going to be a lot of dead skin. There's going to be oil and dirt and adhesives from tapes and all kinds of things. We do everything that we can to do a really good job cleaning all the dead skin off the ears. We have Q-tips to clean inside the ears. We clean the back. We just do a really thorough job. It's like washing a baby. Just think of, we're going to clean this person. And as was mentioned earlier, and I'm sorry I glossed over it, we have the other sheet is covering the lower extremities. And for a lady, might be up to here while we're doing all this up here. And then as we move down, we're just doing a thorough cleaning down to the waist, and then we'll lift the sheet up. We never cover the head. We've never done that. I don't think really it's appropriate. They're still here. This is our loved one. Then we pull it up from the other end, start down at the feet, and work our way up. And then you have to clean the private parts. If odors are going to start, that's where they're going to start. We use a very readily available hospital-type cleanser. You can get it at CVS or any other drugstore. There are a number of them out there, but we use an antibacterial cleanser. Doesn't suds a lot, but it kills bacteria. Where do odors come from? Bacteria growing on the body. So we want to kill the bacteria on the body. It's not to protect us. It's to, out of respect for the deceased, we don't want any odors. So we clean them. We clean the private parts, the genitals, very well. I forgot to mention that sometimes, every situation is different, but sometimes when a person dies, all the muscles relax and urine may be released, the bowels may empty. Yeah. Someone who's been in the hospital for a long time and is dying of natural causes, there's usually not a lot of water in the body, and there's usually no food in the gut, so it's not a problem. That can happen. So that's the first thing we would do in that situation, is we would clean that up before we even put the draw sheet under the body. Mm-hmm. Then we're gonna roll the body. As I mentioned, we're gonna take that draw sheet, roll the body up, and start the back from the neck all the way down, and then from the feet all the way back up. Lay the body back over. Then we're going to pull the body to the other side and do the same process again from the bottom all the way down to the toes, have them nice and clean and laid out, covered with a sheet.
Before you go on, about the closing, back at the beginning, about yeah. closing the mouth and the eyes, when you close them, will they stay in that position?
It totally depends. Usually no. I have seen some people will die and their mouth will just stay closed. Just very naturally and relaxed. Some people, it will just gape open and it looks horrible and no one likes that. There are a number of ways to close the mouth. Probably you can take a beanbag pillow or any kind of pillow, put it under the chin and close the mouth that way. You can tie a bandage. We keep bandages in the kit for this purpose. You can take a long bandage and wrap it around just to get it closed. And sometimes after that, it might stay closed. Sometimes not. And that's yet to come. We'll talk about that in just a minute. So we wash the body. We're going to do a manicure, as I mentioned this morning. We'll do a complete manicure. We'll do a complete pedicure. get everything clean. If someone who's been in the hospital or has been bedridden for a while, there's all kinds of grunge under their fingernails and under their toenails, and we're just getting everything right.
Some nose hair.
Yeah. I mentioned that too. We'll trim the nose hair. We'll trim the ear hair. We keep electric clippers in the kit in case we need to do a trim. We'll do a shave for a gentleman. We're just you do it. He's going to greet the king, so we're getting him ready to greet the king. Yes, ma'am.
You say you're washing the body clean. How exactly? Sponge?
Sponge. We use a sponge, yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. So you just wipe with the sponge and then dry?
We scrub them with a sponge. There's all kinds of dead skin and other,
as I said, adhesives and who knows what.
Like a physoderm?
Antibacterial soap from CVS. It's not a, you know. Physoderm used to be the old one. There are a bunch of them now. So.
And dry with a towel?
Yes. Okay. Dry them with the towel.
And does the skin act the same as it does for a living person?
No. Skin loses its resilience very quickly. You know, you pull on your skin, it goes right back down. It doesn't do that anymore. So.
Can you damage it if you're too harsh?
Well, you can. Okay. Yeah. My mother had very thin skin when she died. We've encountered people who came out of the hospital. One had liver failure, and he was very bloated and was full of IVs and they were leaking. And you encounter things, so be prepared if you're going to be doing this, that you're going to encounter some things. And particularly in the case of IVs and incisions or whatnot that might be leaking, you definitely want to wear gloves in that case.
You just wrap those with something so that...
Yeah, Band-Aid. Mm-hmm. They just usually they come with Band-Aids, but we're going to clean them so that we'll take the Band-Aid off or it'll come off and then put a Band-Aid back on or a bandage, whatever. It's going to be out of sight. It's going to be under the clothes when we're finished.
You mentioned the bloating. I was once told that you embalm, that they want you to embalm so that the body doesn't kind of make sounds and release gases and stuff. Like, what's your experience with that?
This body was maybe bloated is the wrong word. But it was full. He was full of fluid because he'd been pumped full of fluid in the hospital, and he had liver failure, probably kidney failure on top of that. And he was just very. Everything was enlarged because he was full of fluid.
Yeah.
It wasn't gas, and we've never encountered anything like that. I don't know really what more to tell you. We've never had noises. We've never had gas. We've never had anything like that. Okay, where was I? We've done the shave, we've trimmed the hair, we've done anything that needs to be done. Now we have a mixture of olive oil and essential oils. The recipe is in the book. It's 102 drops to a pint. Any essential oil you want to use, we talk about those in the book. Which ones not to use? There are some that are definitely not to be used. I have to look in the book. I don't carry that stuff around in my head. There are some essential oils that are actually dangerous for the nervous system. And there are some that are dangerous for pregnant women. So you want to stick with rosemary,
lavender
maybe. They're in there, but just take a look at the list in there. There's a lot of information on the internet, obviously, essential oils and all that aromatherapy and all that stuff is out there for the new agers and everything. There's a lot of information on essential oils. Handle them with care. They are super concentrated scents. And so you don't want to use extra virgin olive oil. Use virgin olive oil, not extra virgin. Extra virgin is less filtered. It has a lot more solids in it. It has a lot more of its own scent that will compete with whatever essential oil you want to use, whatever scent you're using. Perfumers would never use olive oil because it has its own scent. We use it for obvious reasons. We're Orthodox. This is what we do. And then I usually use the same sponges that we used for cleaning. I just wring them out, rinse them. If you want to use new sponges, then pull out new sponges. They're just basic household sponges. You can get them anywhere. You know, you can stop at your 24-hour grocery on the way to the house if you need to and grab some sponges. We obviously, we don't use the what is Scotch-Brite? We don't use the Scotch-Brite. Just sponges. So I wring them out, I rinse them out, wring them as dry as possible, and then just put the olive oil on and coat the body, head to toe, copious amounts of olive oil. It usually takes at least a half pint to do a body completely, and then roll it over, do the back, front and back, head to toe. We cover this body with olive oil. Little neat story about that. George died at home. We were told he had 12 weeks to live. He lived a year, and he died, and his wife is now the matriarch of our parish. She's about yay big. And we went to the house, Father John and I went to the house. His daughter and son-in-law and his wife were helping prepare the body. And we got to the oil, and I opened the oil, and I put it on the sponge, and I looked over, and here's Lydia standing right here like this. Fill him up. So I just poured it in her hands, and she just covered her husband with olive oil.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's very sweet. So, after we do that,
why the olive oil? Or any oil for that?
Well, that's the real embalming. Those are the balms. You remember the women came bearing spices and ointments to the tomb of Christ. That is embalming. They brought balms in which to put on Christ on the body. That's embalming. That's why I always use the distinction chemical embalming, because true embalming is bringing balms, spices and oils and ointments to put on the body. And again, we're concerned about odors, and it has a nice pleasing odor that, from the essential oils. It's not strong. You walk in the door, you're not going to smell it, but it's just a nice pleasing odor. So that's why we use olive oil. The other reason we use olive oil is there is something miraculous about it. When we finish, when you finish preparing a body and it is, and you've covered them with olive oil, the difference between 45 minutes ago when you walked in the door and when they're laying there with the olive oil is almost miraculous. They look like themselves again. They look like a human being. They don't look like, there's not, the pallor of death is no longer there. It's just, I can't explain it to you. They just look human again. The olive oil soaks in and does something with the skin that just brings it, I don't want to say brings it alive, because obviously they're still dead, but they look human again. So after we've put the olive oil on, we will start getting the clothes ready to put on the body. And dressing the body is probably the most complicated and could be the most dangerous part, if you want to put it that way. It can be difficult depending on what it is they want it to be buried in. A man wants to be buried in a three-piece suit. It's a lot more complicated than a baptismal garment. Baptismal garments are wonderful. They're just so easy to use. I did not mention that we usually will use an adult diaper. Sometimes with females, we might use a sanitary napkin. In the original edition of the book, some of the things that I read talked about using tampons, including in the anus. We've eliminated that practice because we've never needed it. I just don't think it's necessary if we're refrigerating properly. Only once I encountered a body that was clearly leaking and had to insert a tampon to take care of that. And it's because we don't want the odor and we don't want any embarrassment for the family or for the deceased. So we usually will... We always put on an adult diaper. I don't like doing that simply because there's plastic. That's the only reason. If I could get an adult diaper that wasn't wrapped in plastic, that's what we would use. So we're going to clothe the body now.
Do you have to seal the ears and the nose?
Yes.
You
do.
Didn't mention that. So what is
so? You can do it now. You can do it after they're dressed. I kind of prefer to get everything done and then do the final touches.
Okay. I'm jumping ahead.
Yeah. A baptismal garment, as I said, is really, really easy. You just put them on. Put it on. You know, you can start with one arm, another arm. You have to sit the body up in order to get it over the head, but then it will just slide right down. Then you lift the buttocks and the legs and pull it down to the bottom. It's great. Highly recommend everybody get it.
Any undergarments used?
No, not with that. Usually,
not with baptismal.
You know. It is a good idea to use like a t-shirt under there because you've got the olive oil and the t-shirt will take up some of the olive oil. On the legs, it's not necessary at all. T-shirt is really, if you're putting on a shirt, a vest, a suit, a t-shirt, even that t-shirt, the easiest way to do it is take a pair of scissors and cut it from the waist to the collar, not through the collar, to the collar. Then put it over the body, either through the arms first or over the head, and then put the arms through the arms of the shirt, pull it down, and then tuck it around underneath. That avoids so much lifting that we don't want to be doing anyway. Same thing with the vest. Button it, cut it up the back to the collar, not through the collar. You can. It's just easier if you don't go all the way through. Put it over the head and then around like this. The suit, same thing. Yeah, have a vest. The suit, the same thing. Cut it up the back. Funeral directors buy suits that are already cut, and they charge you exorbitant amounts for that cut. Cut it up the back to the collar. Collar on. Arms through the arms. And then tuck it underneath.
You don't always have to do that.
Do what?
No. Is the body stiff?
Usually no. Okay. Usually no. Depends on refrigeration. If you're doing this in the morgue and they were refrigerated, Mr. Fielding is very good. If they're not too busy, he'll pull the body out 3 or 4 hours before we get there. And so it can be more malleable and easier to move. So if you have a good relationship with the morgue or the funeral director, they'll do that for you in the body. We'll be there waiting for you. Trousers are easy. Just put them on. A dress or, you know, skirt, blouse, same thing. The bottom is very easy because there's not a lot of weight. You can easily get trousers on. Pull them up, lift the buttocks, slip them under, and put them on. So the body's dressed. We've done the hair. We've done the ears and everything else. Now we need to seal the orifices. To close the eyes, I should have mentioned this earlier. If you didn't do it then, it's fine. I have seen... I think it's just really very natural to see someone laying in the coffin with just the tiniest opening in their eyes. It just looks so natural. It's happened a couple of times, and it looks very natural. The way you get the eyes to stay closed, don't use barbed wire. Don't use the stuff that the funeral directors use. All it takes is a little twist of cotton. About as much cotton as is on the tip of a Q-tip. Take it and twirl it until you get it about the width of the eyeball. Lift the upper eyelid, put it up under, and close the eyelid. Again, the skin is not as resilient as it was, as it is for me right now. and it, you might have to smooth it out and, you know, get it to lay down. Then repeat on the bottom. And that little sliver of cotton will keep the eyes closed. That's all you need. The ears, I found at the kitchen store of all places, tweezers. They're like this long. And they're perfect. I bought them for our print shop to get little pieces of paper out of the printing machines. But they're perfect for what we do. They give you a lot of purchase, so you can really hold on to them. The ears, you want to take some cotton and fill the ears with cotton. You can straighten the ear canal by tugging on the earlobe and just put cotton in there. The way I do it is I put cotton in until I can... It's not very deep. The ear canal is not a whole lot of space in there. I put cotton in until I can't get any more, and then I take some out. But you don't want it to be visible. Right? Yeah. Put it in until you can see it, and then take a little bit out until you can't see it. That's all you're going to get in there. It's not likely to leak from the ears anyway. The nostrils, remember, we're not just filling the nostrils, we're filling the sinuses. We talked about that. That came up in our last break too. Someone had encountered some leakage, and we think, one, they probably needed to refrigerate the head a little bit if that was a problem. The other is they probably didn't fill the sinuses. They filled the nostrils, maybe not the sinuses. Remember, the sinuses are here, and you've got passages that go up to the upper sinuses. So with these large tweezers, you can just keep putting cotton up in there once again, and you go as far back in as you can possibly go, and then put some more, as far back in as you can possibly go, and some more, until you can see it. You can't put any more in, but take a little bit out so it can't be seen. And we have never had a problem with any leakage whatsoever. Yes, sir?
Is there a risk of tearing tissue at that point?
Tearing tissue? I have never encountered it, and I don't think there is. I mean, you might tear something inside.
Uh-huh.
If you're too rough. But we're not doing that. We've just got tweezers, and we're just going right up the middle and putting them as far back in there as we can. The mouth is the trick. And it's, I don't know if you've ever, yeah, I know most of us have seen war pictures and stuff, and they're horrific. And a dead person with their mouth agape is not a pretty sight. So you definitely want to close the mouth. We've used babushka. Okay. There are a lot of things you can try out there on the internet. We tried denture cream.
On the teeth.
The problem with a denture adhesive on the teeth is you find out a lot of people's teeth don't meet. And the two surfaces have to meet for the glue to work. So I found that out very quickly. A lot of people's teeth don't meet. And the cream just doesn't work. So let's see. We've used the pillow under the chin, but you really don't want that to be there during the funeral, particularly. The last ditch that I was very hesitant to try, but it works every single time, is super glue.
There you go.
Every single time. You take the tiniest drop that you can get out of that tiny little tube and put it, just do what I'm doing right here and put it right back there.
Uh-huh.
Now, super glue is visible when it dries. You probably have all noticed that. So you don't want it to be in the crack or any of it on the front of the lips. You want it to be right back here. And it's always, I always kind of cross my fingers and say a little prayer when I do this, because I don't want it to be visible, but I want it to work. And usually just right behind, you know, you have to look at the person's lips, we're all different, and assess where do I want to put this. And then close the mouth and hold it.
Could you do that with the eyelids as well?
You could, but it's not necessary. Cotton does a great job. This, honestly, this is the last ditch. This was, I know it'll work, but I'm not sure I want to go there. And particularly when I'm talking to people in a room like this, what are they going to think of that? Well, it works every single time. There's no doubt super glue is going to work.
The industry does far worse things.
Oh, far worse. Far worse. If you want to read about setting the features, you can go on the internet and read how funeral directors. It's called setting the features. What we're doing right now is called setting the features. In the first edition, and from things that we had read, we talked about filling the mouth and the throat with cotton. We don't do that anymore because the only odor that we're concerned about is odor that might be coming up from the chest and out of the mouth, but we've closed the mouth, so we're not concerned about that anymore. And we just hold it closed. My big concern about using it the first time I used it was I was afraid that, okay, the mouth is a gape, right? It's like that. How much stress is that chin, is that jawbone going to put on the face, and is it going to to disform the face?
That's what I'm thinking.
It hasn't done that. It's been, thanks be to God, we've never encountered any problem. It looks very natural. It's just all of, I guess all of this skin and muscle structure just holds the jaw in place. So the body is now prepared for burial and ready to be moved into the coffin, where we have our dry ice in the bottom of the coffin. We try to assess right where we're going to want it in the small of the back. You can use the draw sheet, or the way the funeral directors do it works. It's not, it, you know, it's not gracious or anything, but one man under the arms at the head, one man with the feet on the end, and transfer it into the coffin. There's a difference between a coffin and a casket. Anybody know the difference?
No. Not too easy. Somebody else.
Casket is a four-sided box, six-sided if you count the top and the bottom. A coffin is the eight-sided. They call it a toe pincher. It's wider at the shoulders, comes in at the head, goes down at the bottom. So there is a difference.
That's a coffin.
Yeah. They call it a toe pincher coffin. Anyhow, a little trivia.
Casket is more square.
And then once the body's in there, we're going to, the clothes are now all ruffled and everything. We're going to straighten out the body, get it in, and get everything, all the clothes looking nice, and get it just the way we want it. Put the ice on top, close the lid, bring the body to the church. We're done. The whole process takes about 45 minutes.
Wow. Very well.
And interestingly enough, the service that we read for this takes about 45 minutes. It worked out great. I didn't plan it that way. It's just the way it works.
In our tradition, we do a trisagion for the dead ends before transferring to the church.
There are prayers. It's not the trisagion, but there are prayers at the end. In fact, the instructions are read to this point if the preparation is not finished because of refrigeration or whatever reason that there might be, start over. And then when the preparation is done, then come to the end and read the concluding prayers. So that's the way that service works.
Deacon?
Yes?
So is there any need for propping head? Or I remember once where the hand would just keep sliding down. When we tried to keep the hand on the body.
Well, maybe they wanted to be down at the sides. I'm serious. I'm not trying to be funny, but maybe the hands just wanted to be down here rather than being up here. You can tie a ribbon around them.
Pin their clothing.
Yeah, you can use a pin on whatever clothing is there and pin them up here like this.
You're not really putting pillows or anything to prop hands or head up or anything.
You do use a pillow if, I don't know, just a small pillow. Most caskets come with them. I don't know if you're providing them, but, you know, they do. Or you can just make one. You know, you can take a pillowcase and put a towel in it, and you've got a pillow. But we do use a pillow because it's natural. It looks more natural. The head is up in the position that you would expect them to be. If you do have a concern about leakage for some reason around the head, then you can put a little bit of dry ice right under the back of the head. Preferably, I think it should be under the pillow. We're just trying to refrigerate, not freeze. So you can put a little dry ice under the head if you're concerned about that. So now we're going to transport the body to the church. And however you do that, we do talk about in the book about having a transport team, which I think is a wonderful idea. Usually it's just a couple of guys volunteer and they show up with a Suburban or somebody's minivan. Caskets will fit in the minivan just fine. And transport it over. If the women are preparing the body, it's really nice to have a couple of guys who can move the body into the casket, carry the casket out to the car. Caskets are heavy. And bodies aren't light either, so it's really good to have 4 to 6 guys actually to move it out there. We're really lucky. A couple of parishioners are antiquers. They're actually eBayers. They're just out there all the time looking for stuff for eBay. And they ran across an old catafalque that had, you know, the accordion, the funeral director's accordion catafalque. And they bought it and donated it to the church. So we can use that. If you got 2 guys who can lift it onto there, then you can roll it out. So you don't need as many people to carry it. But we will bring it into the church right about here.
Yeah, right where you're standing.
Facing the altar. And take the lid off, put the pillow under, and here's the deceased. And we would sing Holy God through that carrying in. Someone might ring the bell. I don't know. And readers can be in here ready to read and have a trisagion and the vigil in here that night. Really, you have a great setup here for a vigil because we really recommend that we have a gathering place for the family somewhere else. Family and friends, they can gather, they can talk, they can do all of that stuff someplace else. This is a place for prayer, and everyone should know that. If we're not reading around the clock, really like to have the readers here first, have them reading when people come in, when they first come in. Even at that, it's amazing the amount of noise and laughter and things that can go on in the back of the church. Because so many people these days have no sense of reverence and have no understanding of what's going on in here. But with the readers reading the Psalms, it tends to, you know, indicate to people who have some sense that something's going on here and this is not a time for joking and playing around. But we provide that space out there and let them do that out there. And also, that also provides the bereaved family, particularly if it's a spouse or a parent, the opportunity to choose. They can be in here praying. They can go out there and meet their friends and family. They can come back in here. They can go back and forth as the mood suits them. I did want to say one thing about burial. We're not tied to any timetables. We don't have to bury in 24 hours. We don't have to bury in 3 days. We can take as long as is needed. Archbishop Dimitri laid in the cathedral for 5 days. But I personally feel that it is important to do it sooner rather than later. From my own personal experience, and I will tell you my own personal experience. Frank's bedroom was right beside mine. So anytime I was going or coming, you get in the habit of looking in to check on Frank. And I just, you just do that. You know, you're a caregiver. You check and see everything's okay. Yeah, you do your rounds, but even when you're just coming or going, you're going to the bathroom, coming back, whatever, you check on Frank. And he died. We took him to the funeral director, took him to the funeral home, wasn't it?
Yeah, he made all those arrangements.
Yeah, he'd made all those arrangements. So he went to the funeral home for whatever combination of reasons. We couldn't do the funeral the next day like we did for my mother. So it was a couple of days, 3 days, maybe four. It was a while. And I found myself, every time I went past his door, checking on Frank. And I would look in, he's not there. The second thought that went in my mind was, Frank's in that refrigerator downtown. And it was just that. It was an annoyance. It was a little gnawing thing that we're not done yet. We're not done yet. That wasn't the way it came in my head, but that's the truth of it. It's not done. The family is kind of in the middle. They're caught in a middle space. Sure, he's dead, but we're not done yet. And it's not until the last shovel of earth goes on the grave that we're done. And now we can start the next phase. Until then, we're kind of caught in the middle, and it's not a good place to be. It's not a comfortable place to be. We want it to happen sooner rather than later, but we're not on any timetable. So we try to get that balance and get it done as quickly as we can. If everybody's here and everybody's ready, ideally the next day. And let's move on. Let's get on with the grief process. Let me tell you about our very first funeral, and this is why I'm saying this. This is another indication and reason for doing this. Zoran, I mentioned this morning, it was an emergency, very unexpected. He went in the hospital for some tests, and he was in the wheelchair being brought out. You know, they won't let you walk out. They have to wheel you out. He was in the wheelchair leaving the hospital, and he died. And he left three teenage orphans. His wife had died many years earlier in a terrible car crash. Zoran had a home, and that was about it. He owned a house. He had nothing else. So it was all, okay, pull out the instructions that I had written, and we'd all thought through this, and let's go do this. And it was tragic. It was just really, really tragic. So that was the first time in the morgue where the director said, you're the first Christians who've done this here. We loaded him into the Suburban, took him out to Wadmala Island. Two of our parishioners had dug his grave out there. And we had his funeral outside Father John Breck's small chapel, because the chapel wasn't big enough to actually put a casket inside and have the service inside. It's a tiny little thing. So it was very nice, right outside the chapel. And everything was set. He was laying there, and his children arrived. And it was like something out of you know, the Middle East. It was just horrible. It's heart-wrenching. Wailing and crying. I mean, screaming. Falling on the casket. It was heart-wrenching. Started the service. The kids calmed down. It rained a little bit. The music got wet, and then it stopped. The sky cried a little bit. Did the service, carried him down by the river to the grave, put him in the grave, filled it up, came back up to the house for the mercy meal, and by the time we left after the mercy meal, his kids were laughing and telling stories about their dad. That's what an Orthodox funeral is supposed to do. It takes care of everything. All of the hymns, all of the everything, all of the prayers, everything. It does what it's supposed to do. It healed those kids amazingly, almost miraculously, to a point where they could begin to move forward. They couldn't have done that without that. So that, and hearkening back to cremation, studies have shown that people who are cremated aren't even remembered.
Right.
You can read about it in the book. There's a lot more information on cremation in there. A sizable percentage of cremains aren't even picked up at the crematory. They're left there. There's none of this, none of the healing and none of the grieving and none of the saying goodbye can happen if we don't have this, if we don't have the funeral. And the preparation of the body for burial is amazingly, maybe it's an overused word, cathartic. The three ladies who prepared their mother, every time we see them still, thank you so much. We would never have had that opportunity, you know, if you hadn't provided that. And it's a wonderful service that we do, and it's very important for the family, for the deceased, and for us. It's always an honor. It's always an honor. People ask the question, well, what about the non-Orthodox? It's actually right here. Does anyone recognize this little book? They've carried it around for years. It's right in here. The church says bury the dead. It doesn't say bury the Orthodox. We've buried numerous people who were not Orthodox simply because we were asked to do it. I'm sorry, what'd you say, baby?
I thought you were looking for time.
No, I was looking for...
I've done a few non-Orthodox burials.
Yeah. It's always an honor. It's a child of God, and I've been asked to do this final service of preparing them for burial. What more can be said? Anyone have any questions?
I'd like to mention, ask you to say more about the burial... properly. We talked about this, you and
yes.
me on the side, but could you tell them about the importance of actually burying?
We have the same tradition. If we're going to do it all, we're going to do it all. We may have to pay someone to dig the grave if it's at the monastery, but if it's on a friend's property, then or in our cemetery, then we're going to dig the grave. When we take the body out of the church, you need something to put a coffin on when it's standing here, okay? If you don't have the catafalque like we've been fortunate enough to have. Anyone can make this. Take one sheet of 3/4-inch plywood. I think the dimensions are in the book. You cut them into pieces about yay long and yay tall, however tall you want them to be, and then cut a 3/4-inch groove, half the width of that board in each one of them. Then you take those boards and put them together like this. Okay, you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
That groove is a 3/4-inch groove. It's going to accommodate the 3/4-inch plywood. It goes halfway through, so when you put the two of those grooves together, they're standing at the same level. And it forms an X. And you have two X's laying here. You can put a VW bus on that thing, and it's going to hold it.
That's right.
No problem whatsoever. Then we have a black sheet that we put over it and put the casket on top of that, and then the dry ice can go underneath it. Black is not the appropriate color for an Orthodox funeral. The baptismal garment will be white if you choose to use one. It's our heavenly birthday. It's a sad occasion, but black is not the appropriate color. It just happens to be the color of the sheet that we had to put under it, and it works. We're going to take the body out of the church, feet first, so they need to turn around and go feet first. I guess it would be through the double doors. out to the waiting transport, transport the body to the cemetery. Again, reading the Psalms the whole time. You can read the Psalms all the way to the cemetery. I was taking care of Archbishop Dimitri's body, and I didn't get to read. I was really kept pretty busy through that period of his funeral. So I asked Metropolitan Jonah to bless me to read the gospel from the church to the cemetery, and he did. So I finally got to read the gospel.
Question.
When we get to the cemetery, again, the body will always be carried feet first down to the grave. You want to have boards down the side of the grave. Where we are, we're on mostly sandy soil, and it will collapse in a heartbeat, so you want to have boards down the side so the pallbearers can walk down the side, walking on boards and not on the soil. If it collapses, then you can have a real problem with casket falling on someone's leg or something like that. So you want to have boards down the side. Rope works fine for lowering the casket. You could use web belt, but rope works fine. If you want to keep the ropes, then you want to put a 2x4, a couple of them in the bottom to hold the casket off of the ground so you can pull the ropes back up. If you don't want to keep the ropes, just drop them in the grave and leave them there. And then we do the graveside service, and then we fill the grave. Even if we're in a commercial cemetery, and even if the grave diggers are sitting over there under the tree waiting for us to get finished.
With their skip loader.
Yeah.
With their skip loader.
Yeah. The very least we will do is everyone present comes forward and puts at least one shovel of dirt in the ground. At least one shovel of dirt. If we're at the monastery or we're in any type of private situation, then, of course, we fill the grave. And it's done.
One situation that I've had in that, which I had pushback from the grave people, said, no, we have to cover the grave. And said, look, I'll tell you what. We're gonna bury it. We came here to bury this person. That means we're going to bury it. And when we are done, if you come over and you see anything that does not meet your specifications, tell us and we'll fix it. I've never had anybody ever give us any trouble.
We've never had anybody even give us any pushback. Yeah, they're getting their pay. They don't care. Go ahead and do my work for them.
It's very therapeutic.
Yes, it is very therapeutic for the family. It's for the community. It's very important for the community. This ministry can be really important for the community. It can be a really wonderful pan-Orthodox activity where, you know, you can work together on getting a cemetery. You can participate in each other's funerals. You may already do that as clergy anyway, but you can have people helping to do this. It can be a real community building activity. I think I mentioned earlier that we have had at least one convert from a non-Orthodox funeral that we did. And we buried her husband just because she asked for us to, and she became a parishioner. We have prepared people we had never met. Priests get this all the time. Yeah, my uncle died. He was a lifelong Orthodox, but he hadn't been to church in 30 years. Will you bury him? Okay. We prepared one gentleman for burial who was buried in Romania. Don't let them tell you it can't be done. We have had people transported all over. It's really easier to do it ourselves. Anytime you're dealing with a commercial cemetery or a commercial carrier, whether it's an airplane, train, or a truck carrier, you're dealing with a corporation. They have their own rules. Another really good reason to have our own cemeteries. They have the right to require anything they want to require of you. if you're going to be buried in their cemetery or carried on their aircraft. You also have the same right to go elsewhere. And that's the difference in the funeral industry, is people don't exercise that right. In most states, California is unusual. In most states, there are as many as two or three times the number of funeral homes that the demographics will support. In most businesses, if you've got twice as many of the businesses competing for an amount of business, what happens? Prices go down. People go out of business. Not in the funeral industry. If you have twice as many funeral homes as the demographic, the death rate demographics require, prices go up. They only have half as many customers as they need to support their business. So they both raise prices. And we pay them. It's crazy. California is unusual in that you actually have about 200 fewer funeral homes than the demographics require. Guess what happens? Prices are lower in California than they are in places where they have twice as many as they can support. Interesting. It violates all the laws of business, of economics. They just don't apply to the funeral industry. It's a fascinating thing. So if you need to ship a body on an airliner or a train, then you have to obey their rules, but it can be done. The funeral directors will tell you no. But you go talk to the airline, well, you need to do this, 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 and this. There is a particular type of container that they use. What's it called? Air tray?
No.
There's a particular type of container that they use for a body that's being shipped on an airliner, but they do it all the time.
Oh, every airline just about on their website tells you how to ship a body.
Just look on their website. They'll tell you how to.